Hater, love it. We're back here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. I thought it's interesting because I watch national sports radio shows to kind of see where their big points
are. Just think about what you said. I watch national radio shows.
Yeah. Because now, like, radio shows are all like we are. You can watch it on YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, X, whatever, Facebook. But because, like, somebody brought up yesterday, like, man, you guys are really talking about this New York Jets story. It's like, it's the number one story in sports on a Wednesday.
Oh, there's no question.
And then someone's like, you know, you guys talk a lot of Deion Sanders. I'm like, Deion Sanders makes the needle move in college football.
Absolutely, it does.
And obviously, we had his audio yesterday, which I thought was interesting because we heard what he said, according to the media, when they asked about his name being around in the news.
You're mentioned for everything that comes up.
I love this, man.
College, pro, whatever. Yeah. You, is that just the price of winning?
You gonna talk like that with my AD in here? That's so disrespectful. Sorry. You gonna talk about me going somewhere with my AD in here? Yeah, he mentioned us with a lot of other stuff before we start winning, too, didn't he? That wasn't fair, was it? Price. That's the price of everything. Yeah.
Coach Prime, I'm
gonna
keep going with that.
I'm happy where I am, man. I'm good. I got a kickstand down. You know what a kickstand is? A lot of people don't in there and not of age don't know what a kickstand is. That means I'm resting. I'm good. I'm excited. I'm enthusiastic about where I am. I love it here. I truly do. Next question.
Next question. You know what else a kickstand does? It goes up fast, and you can motor out of there. You ever been a kid on a bike with a kickstand? You flip that thing up, and you're gone.
It also lets you depart the bicycle.
That's right.
A lot of confusion after a couple of days of listening to that. I do think that you made a good point yesterday of Deion and how he's perfect for college.
Oh, it's great.
Obviously, like, the recruitment in Colorado is doing exactly what they want to do. I get so much hatred from my friends who are all Mizzou fans, and they're like, well, why are you a Colorado fan? I was like, well, first off, why are you a Mizzou fan? You didn't go to school at Mizzou. And that's always their thing to me.
Oh,
like, you didn't
get that mad.
I'm like, I like Deion. I like this sort of Warren Sapp mohawk getting jacked on the sidelines when they're starting to close down in the game last week. Like, Warren Sapp is a national treasure. Deion Sanders is great for college football, makes it entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
And I am worried, right, about the game on Saturday against Kansas at 2:30 at Arrowhead. But, like, I'm also worried, kind of, like, if they don't get in the college football playoff.
Right.
Because, like, I feel like all those players that are stars, like Shador Sanders and Travis Hunter and his kid, Shiloh Sanders as well, maybe not a star yet, but obviously not as good as his brother or Travis Hunter, but, like, they're going to take the exit route. And I'm like, we're going to miss the final big part of the season with one of the biggest teams in college football.
Yeah, we are.
Entertaining-wise.
Right.
So don't jump on me on the text line saying, like, they're not even a top five school. I guarantee you this, I'd love to see Colorado and Indiana play. Back, who wins that game?
I think it's Colorado.
I think Colorado.
Let me ask you this, though. In all honesty,
who do you want to see in the college football playoffs?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you want to watch Boise State?
No. I
want
to watch Deion.
Do you want to watch Indiana?
No. I'd rather watch Boise State than Indiana.
I can't name one player on Indiana's team, and they're the fifth-ranked team in the country.
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, they got that. That Cinzetti's Pizza is the coach. That's all I know.
I've got to Google everybody on Indiana. Like the coach said, Google me,
yeah,
I win.
Yeah, right.
I don't got to Google Colorado.
Right.
Right?
But that's what I'm getting at. That's what sports is about. How do you appeal to the most people?
Yeah.
And whether you like Deion or you don't like Deion, you're watching Deion. You're paying attention because you're rooting against him or you're rooting for him.
Cinzetti's
Pizza,
yesterday.
I don't know anything about that guy. And he can tell me to Google him all the that's the most compelling thing he's done. Deion, you know, and I know all college coaches change lives for kids, but Deion's impact is right there. We're all watching this thing because he is such an impactful person. He's such a great guy. He's such a funny dude, and he's energetic, and he's just, I mean, like, that's the guy I want my kid to play for. If I had a son and he had the opportunity to play college football and you said to me, Bob, who do you want your son to play for? Deion Sanders, because he's going to learn life lessons. He's going to get a dose of reality. They're not going to blow smoke, and you're going to get prepared to go up to that next level.
And not
and play.
Only that, my kid's probably going to get a good chance of making some money.
That's what I'm saying. He's going to go and play. And so if they don't make the college football playoff, And you're looking like, okay, then we can watch Colorado in a bowl game. Odds are it's not going to be the same bowl game because these guys aren't going to play.
Especially when they're going 1-2.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where my kind of philosophy comes in. I think bowl games are now officially antiquated and they need to go away. I think they're just a money grab for a lot of guys in terrible blazers that walk around as presidents of the bowl committee. Those guys are making $300,000 to $500,000 a year to do nothing.
The Pop-Tart Bowl is fun. And this year they're going to have three.
Three, yeah. Three, great. But
Frosted
so
Hot Chocolate, Mystery, and Wildberry.
Yeah, like if we don't have the Pop-Tarts, though, like, are you really
last
paying
year,
attention?
Last year one committed suicide on the show, went into the toaster.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, this is morbid. Yeah,
that was crazy.
All right, dude, cut to commercial, Frank.
Yeah. But in this day and age where we are with the NIL,
yeah,
if you want to really push these bowl games up a hill like a boulder, because guys are opting out.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. But if you want to move these games along, get people, because nobody goes to these bowl games anymore. There are tickets to be had all over the place. Not a lot of people are paying attention to them.
Not unless it's like the Big Four.
Yeah.
And like, even those
are you going to the Weed Eater Bowl in Memphis on a Tuesday night in the rain?
I would go to the Pop-Tart Bowl if we went to like a certain pharmacy before.
Well, yeah, you'd
watch that sort of halftime show, right, where like Pop-Tarts are dancing. I don't know why that does it for me, but it's just hilarious.
Yeah, but you're not, you have not mentioned one thing about football.
Yeah, I know.
Right, you want to see a Pop-Tart dance?
Yes, sir.
Correct. Right. That because it's entertaining.
Pop-Tarts or toaster strudels? Really quick.
Toaster strudel. I think. Yeah.
I think so. You're right.
Yeah, toaster strudel. Yeah. It's a little flaky.
They never give you enough frosting.
They never do give you enough frosting. There's I'm a frosting guy. I would eat a can of frosting if it was right here.
Oh, I'd suck that thing out of the bag.
I mean, I love frosting. Give me the frosting. How do people like my kids?
I took the edges off the Pop Tart. That's how much I love the frosting.
Oh, I love frosting. Like, give me the cake and they got the.
You ever had the buttercream frosting from Costco where you just want to go around the whole cake?
Yeah, you want to eat the whole cake. Yeah. I mean, I'm a frosting guy. So
that was a quick sidetrack. Getting into the college bowl games and why it's about the stars, not the atmosphere.
So if you want these guys to play in these games, like last year with Marvin Harrison Jr. didn't play, and you want to see these big name players play, they need to start paying appearance fees to have these players show up. Hey, I know Colorado, you didn't make the college football playoff, but you're going to the Weed Eater Bowl, and we got to have Shador, we've got to have Travis Hunter. We'll give you guys $1 million apiece in appearance fee
to play
in this game. I don't know.
That's a good question,
but it's a million area. It's
$1 million
right there, right?
They make that in their sleep. Those two guys do at least.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I don't know, maybe Brock Bowers wasn't making that when he was at Georgia and he's sitting out the game. And it's like, well, because what was it? There was a kid a couple years ago for Michigan who blew his ACL as a tight end. Was it Butts? Was that his name?
There was a Butts from
Michigan.
And he
ripped his ACL, and I don't think we've seen him since.
Because Michigan plays like Butt.
Okay. National champions last year. But, no,
that's living in the past.
No, I am with you. But the problem is that, like, when it comes to the money, it would be a gray area for certain athletes. Because, like, Travis Hunter and Shador Sanders are making a ton of NIL money.
Right.
So they don't need to be persuaded. But in your opinion, they do because they make the game better. Because, like, if the backup for Colorado is playing and Shador and Travis Hunter's not playing, I have no interest.
Right.
Because there is examples out there like Jake Butts, and there's example like Jameson Williams who blow their ACL and can't play the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jameson Williams was such a talented player that the Detroit was like, screw, we're still taking him the first round.
Right.
We'll take the first year. We'll take the gambling suspension. We'll take the gun suspension. We'll take this suspension. And we'll still play. I mean, he looked like he was balling last week. That's all I know. When he plays, man, he's a baller. He just got to stay on the field. But I'm with you. Like, I think there should be some sort of like incentive to play, but I just don't think it's ever going to happen because it's showing you how powerful these kids are without knowing, I think, the full strength of how powerful they are. Because, like, back in the day before they were getting paid, you know, there's a guy that used to do radio here, and he was like, they should all just walk off the field at the start of the game and see what college football
and
does.
See what happens, yeah. And I think they should do that in the NCAA tournament now, too.
Be crazy,
right?
Wouldn't it?
Like, all right, we're out, man. You guys are. But now we've got the NIL.
Could you imagine that song? The ball is tipped.
No, it wasn't.
And no one's here.
No one's playing, you know? Like literally nobody there. But college athletes have had this power for so long. And now, and I love it. Like, every day it makes me smile when I see a college athlete getting an NIL this or an NIL that or getting paid for this or getting paid for that because I love, you know, flipping the apple cart, you know, so to speak. And I love to see the old guard squirm and realize that they've been basically embezzling money for all these years in college athletics departments and paying themselves exorbitant salaries to do nothing. And all of these athletes were getting screwed this whole time. So every time an athlete gets paid, I smile, just like every time a angel gets its wings, you know, I smile. I do with these athletes. And so I think any way that we can pay these guys and compensate these guys more, let's do it. Our friend Kurt Nelson from the Royals Hall of Fame texted me yesterday about, we were talking about the conference playoff game going away, right? The championship games. He goes, that's never going to happen. He goes, but I do think we'll expand this field to 16, right? And the college football playoff will be expanded to 16, right? I think once we get to 16, we got to look at it from a realistic point of view. Yeah. We don't need these bowl games anymore. They're stupid.
College football is a pharmaceutical doctor. They are giving you a low dose of medicine so that you get hooked to where it no longer works. You have to come back and take another form of medicine, and it doesn't work, so come back and get a stronger dose to the point where you're like, see you next month, doc.
Right.
Hey, here's four teams, here's six teams, here's eight teams, here's 12 teams. March Madness, man.
Right.
Look at March Madness.
And that's going to expand, and I think it should, because if it doesn't, they're not going to be able to preserve the tournament the way that it is, so I don't have a problem with that. But we don't need these bowl games anymore. They are antiquated. They don't do anything for anybody anymore. It's not that cool to go to a bowl game. Everybody makes them now. So I just think we need to expand this thing to 16, and then that's it. And if you didn't make the field of 16, see you next year.
That's right. And you can watch all those bowl games at your local Johnny's Tavern.
Yeah, absolutely, because this football season, the best place to watch the game is Johnny's. Now through December 15th at any Johnny's Tavern, scan the QR code to enter for a chance to win a tailgate prize pack and the grand prize of a hosted watch party with a $300 bar tab for you and your friends. Each location will have a winner, so don't miss out. Grab your friends, grab a Yingling, and get in on the action only at Johnny's Tavern in partnership with 96.5 The Fan, your home for football fun and Yingling, and you must be 21 or over to enter.
Coming up on the other side, a terrible Chiefs take that we all have, plus Nate Taylor, who gives great Chiefs takes. Now I want a Chiefs steak. You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your new home for K-State athletics, 96.5 The Fan.
Back here at 96.5 The Fan, Bob Fesco, Dusty Leggins, Mac Morey with you here on a wonderful Thursday afternoon. Before we get to Nate Taylor, I think it's fun to have these sort of conversations.
Mm-hmm.
What's the worst Chiefs take you've ever had? Because we were talking about high steaks, cheesecake, cheese steaks. These are Chiefs takes. What's the worst Chiefs take you could honestly admit that you've had?
Well, it comes from a guy who was on Twitter yesterday complaining about the offense for the Chiefs just is woefully slow, is the quote that this gentleman used.
Well, they averaged 23.6 points in the first half, 24.4 points in the second five games.
Okay.
So there you go.
Yeah,
so
it's woefully
about
slow.
About average?
Yeah, I think his name is Ben Fennell. I don't know, like we were talking about Fennell earlier. It's tough to watch KC roll out Hopkins, Smith, Schuster, Watson at wide receiver. These dudes are running with ankle weights. They can't be pressed. They don't threaten anyone. Running back position, not dynamic. 9-1. So thanks for your take there, Ben.
Is Dan Kilgore going to play?
Exactly. I mean, Ben Fennell, NFL on CBS producer. Oh. Too slow for his liking. I think I have probably two. There was a time where I advocated trading Travis Kelce because...
Tough. That's tough.
But the reason I advocated that is because I was told by somebody in the league, everybody but Mahomes is available. And then they ended up trading Tyreek. Right? Like, so you look at it, you're like, maybe everybody really was available at that time. And that was really before Travis took off to be who he was. It was right on that cusp of him... Andy getting his worn out welcome,
throwing the flag,
right in that area. Right in that area of that. And so, yeah, clearly was wrong on that. The other one was I liked Matt Castle. I still like Matt Castle.
I think we all drink that Patriots Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
We found out Scott Pioli and Matt Castle were coming over here after they went 11-5 because of the Chiefs knocking out Tom Brady. We're like, we got the Patriot way, baby.
Right.
And boy, were we like everybody else that got the Patriot way and found out the hard way.
Yeah, but I still like Matt Castle a lot. And someday I would love to have him sit in this studio and open the door on everything that went on inside that organization when he was the quarterback, because it was children fighting in a sandbox back then. So that was my, I root for Castle.
Yeah, I'll shoot him a text tomorrow.
All right.
See if he'll come on the show. And see if he has any relation to White.
No.
Okay. Mine is this, and I will admit this to be honest with you. When Mahomes was going to be the starter for the first year, I said on Bink at Night, when I filled in for Jay Binkley, and I never probably was going to fill in again if they found this out a year later, I said Patrick Mahomes would be consistently inconsistent, or I wrote it wrong, but consistently inconsistent in year one as a starter.
I don't think that's a bad take.
Because I was like, he's going to show us, because all we had seen is the Atlanta game to Tyreek, the Denver game, and that was it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all we had. And I was like, guys like this give me the vibe of like, one game, it might be 350, three touchdowns, no interceptions. The next game, you might see, I don't know, like 280 and three interceptions and one touchdown. And then the next week, you might see four. Boy, was I wrong.
No, you
were.
And
I've never been happier to be wrong.
But that's not a terrible take. And I know from just having conversations over the years.
Turned out to be 50 and 5,000.
Yeah, right. Like, so. But their expectation for him in that first year, and I remember talking to people, it's like, if we go 8-8, we'll be all right. Like, that was kind of the expectation. They signed Sammy Watkins to give him a veteran presence at wide receiver, to give him somebody stable that he could throw the football to. So even inside that building and inside the league, people were looking at him, maybe 8-8, we'll see what we can build on. Oh, this is what we have. Like, nobody truly knew what this guy was going to be about until probably that second game, Pittsburgh, then the San Francisco game here was week three. And then it was, you know, they hit the ground running after that.
He went, what, 4 touchdowns week one, 6 in week two against Pittsburgh.
And had 10 coming home in 2 weeks. You're like, oh my God.
For 1,000 yards.
Right. No, it was. You're right.
Like, he was everything but inconsistent. He was consistently amazing, and the rest is history.
The rest is history, yeah.
People are like, man, he could just be back that day again. What, with Bob Sutton on the defensive coordinator?
He had to score. Like, Patrick Mahomes literally had to score 50 in order to give himself a chance to win a football game every single week.
Before we get to our guy, Mac, what was your worst Chiefs take of all time?
I thought Clyde Edwards-Helaire was going to be awesome for
this
team.
We all did, though.
I thought Sky Moore was going to be good even after the first year. I still had hope. So maybe those two recently come to mind for sure.
All right, let's do it.
He's the only man in history to win a race in a hot dog costume and break the news that Chris Jones is back with the Chiefs.
I'll get on that, Coach.
Yeah, all right.
Here's Nate Taylor from The Athletic.
That's right. Nate Taylor, presented by Mark Ferguson. We all make mistakes. Let Mark and his legal team make the best of them. 816-221-1750. That's right. We all make mistakes and have bad takes. Nate, you're a writer, so you're a lot smarter than us blowhards at talking to a microphone. What's probably your worst Chiefs take you've ever had?
I do love Mark's one about, like, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because I just remember thinking, like, oh, this is the newest version of Brian Westbrook. This is going to be pretty incredible. Man, am I 7 now, going on 8 years covering the team? What is my worst sort of take or projection? Because I never say predictions, fellas. I say projection.
Mm-hmm. See, you're smart.
I try to be.
Shout out UCM.
I don't know. I'm trying to think something that's not necessarily totally draft related.
Just answer the question like you should. I don't have bad takes or predictions. I get everything right, and we can move on. It's okay, man. You're great at what you do.
That is, thank you, Bob, but that is definitely not the case. Now,
he's like, my worst take is they're not going undefeated.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I did think Marquez Valdes-Scantling was going to be a lot better. I really believed that.
You're not alone.
He had 2 incredible Januarys, but he was very inconsistent. So a lot of people obviously point to Clyde based on where he was drafted. I remember thinking that, like, in 2021, I'm trying to remember correctly, in 2021, that was going to be a pretty good draft class. Now, you can make the argument that it is, but at the same time, that was during COVID, and we weren't totally sure. It was very hard to project anybody in the draft that year, I felt. So, there's times where obviously it happens, but, you know, I think Clyde and probably Mecole Hardman get the brunt of it, just because they're functional players, they're contributors, but they're not, you know, first and second round picks.
Yeah, they're not dudes.
Correct.
Or as Dion would say, they're not leaders and dogs, they're just guys.
Nate, let's play a little revisionist history here for a second. If Tyreek Hill doesn't get in trouble off the field and they don't know what's going to happen to him, who do they take instead of Mecole Hardman that year?
DK Metcalf.
yeah, that's the one everybody points to, right? It does suck. If you have to remember this too, like, I think they still might take a receiver. It just might be in, like, the third round instead of the second round, just because Tyreek was going to come up on a contract. Now, in one of the more ridiculous ways I've ever seen, you know, the off-the-field turbulent offseason kind of led to him, you know, signing a below market deal to return to the Chiefs once he was basically once the league said, hey, we're not going to suspend you, we don't have enough evidence based on the allegations of that offseason, I do think they probably may have taken someone at the defensive line position, if not for the uncertainty at the time with, you know, Tyreek Hill and the fact that, hey, Mecole Hardman was a speedster. I do want to remind people, like, he's still very fast, but he, no one was going to replicate Tyreek's skill, speed, I should say. But I would probably guess, based on what they've done recently, that they probably would have looked at someone as a defensive line position. But you have to remember, too, that because of the Breland Speaks experiment, they went and traded for Frank Clark. You know, so when you trade for someone, it's mostly because you were not in position to draft someone at that position, or the player you drafted at that position is not performing up to expectations to where you need to immediately kind of refill that role.
Nate, I don't know. We're talking to Nate Taylor, the Athletic, here on Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan. Nate, I don't know if this is a cause of concern, but I did some numbers kind of quickly. In the first five games, the defense was allowing 17 points per game. Pretty good. The last five games, they've allowed 21.2. I know that's only 5 points, but come to think about it, in the NFL, that's a little bit of a drastic difference. What's been different with the defense the last five games as opposed to the first five games when they were playing all-world teams?
Yeah, it's a great point, and especially because the Chiefs are playing a lot of one-score games, those 5 points do really matter, Dusty. I get the sense that it's a couple things, but I just want to remind people, George Karloftis has been fine. Tershawn Wharton had a very good start to the season. He's kind of tapered off. Obviously, there's no Charles Omenihu. You know, he might play a handful of snaps against the Carolina Panthers, but again, we'll find out, you know, in the next couple of days or so. Outside of Chris Jones, they cannot get consistent pressure with four, and it's becoming a troubling trend, and it's one of the reasons why their sack numbers are not what they were from a year ago. So last year, whether it was the blitz or whether it was Chris Jones or George Karloftis taking another step in his career, they were able to get consistent pressure, which is one of the reasons they were, you know, arguably the best defense in the league last year based on the competition they had played. This time around, especially what we saw against the Buffalo Bills, Chris Jones is still excellent. He's still able to get in the backfield and still make the quarterback move up into the pocket or get Josh Allen to say, hey, maybe I shouldn't hold on to the ball this long. The issue, though, is, you know, they haven't really played Josh Uche, who they traded for. Hey, they haven't gotten great production from George Karloftis. They cannot get pressure unless they blitz. And I just think the simplest way for Spagnuolo to sort of show something but not really show everything, i.e. spy, i.e. zone blitzes, was to just go cover zero and give credit to Josh Allen. They got the protections right. He made the important throws at the right time. But that's the only time outside of Chris Jones having a handful of snaps where the defensive line, you know, made it easier for the secondary. Instead, the secondary, I think, had a lot of the burden against the Buffalo Bills. And I think that's one of the reasons why all of a sudden you go from having a very good start to the season to now you're just okay, you're good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a reason why that 30-game streak of not giving up 30-point snaps, it's because they could not hit Josh Allen, let alone sack him. They have not had a sack from the defensive line in the last 2 weeks.
So how does that get better? Is it just bringing Charles Omenihu back? Is it scheming? Like, how do we improve on that? Because the more you're talking about it, the more I'm going, oh, that's a little concerning right now. And I don't get concerned in the regular season, but that one right there, you're like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. When you start playing like legit worthy opponents who have three or four passing options, you got to start getting home with four. So it's going to take somebody next to Chris Jones, right? We've seen it before, whether it was Chris Jones and Frank Clark or Chris Jones and George Karloftis, obviously, or Chris Jones and Charles Omenihu last postseason before he got hurt. I mean, I'd hate to put a lot of pressure on a guy coming back from an ACL, but you got any juice, Charles? Any juice. We'll take it, man. I do think it's time for Steve Spagnuolo to start experimenting because you're still stopping the run. You're still getting teams in like third and sevens, third and nines, but you got to start playing Joshua Uche more. Obviously, Charles Domenech will be back in the mix. That will take Felix. I'm sorry, guys. It's been nice, but the games are getting colder and they're getting more important. And look, Felix and DK Uzomah is great on first down. He cannot be on the field on third down. He can't. Okay, so you can go to the NASCAR package where you have a Minshew on the inside, and you still have maybe Mike Dana or Josh Uche opposite of George Karloftis. And every once in a while, throw in Leo Chenault, because you know at least he's going to give you max effort, and he can sort of he is a freak athlete. So I mean, just start experimenting, just trying to like the question that I think everyone should be thinking moving forward. The next time you play the Bills in January, right, is who are your top four pass rushers when Steve Spagnuolo doesn't blitz? And, guys, we only have two answers of the four players. It's Karloftis, it's Chris Jones, and then it's a big no question mark on who the third and the fourth guy is. And they need to find those answers between now and the postseason.
Nate, this game against Carolina, the Chiefs, I believe, personally, are better at every position on the field, 11 on 11 on both sides. From what I see. I mean, I know there's some people who say, well, they have Chuba Hubbard. Give me a break. I get it. He's had a good year, but let's be honest. I think I would still take Isaiah Pacheco and Kareem Hunt over him and Brooks, the rookie, who's getting his first start against the Chiefs this week. Hopefully that goes well. Probably won't. Chiefs do very well against the run. But I ask you this. Yep. Maybe I'm in the same mold as your kid. I want to see 48-7. I know deep down Dusty Likens knows that's not going to happen. And we had a conversation earlier where Bob was like, I don't care if they win 13-10 or 31-10, just win and move on. Carolina, non-Carolina. What does Nate Taylor want to see in this game?
Okay, here's the version that I want to see. I want to see some highlight-worthy plays. I want to see I wrote about this today in The Athletic, an actual deep ball completion from Patrick Mahomes to Xavier Worthy. You know, you kind of need to figure that out, too, before the postseason. Yeah, I would like to see, you know, a couple sacks from Chris Jones or George Karloftis, or, again, somebody from the defensive line. Maybe it's Tershawn Wharton in a one-on-one situation. But let me tell you the reality, gentlemen. The reality is the Chiefs will do the simple things and ask their players to do the simple things to get out of Charlotte with a victory, which means there's probably going to be no pizzazz. There's probably going to be no deep shots. It's all going to be about can you make the incremental improvements, and this is just step one before we get ready for the all-important games. And, you know, the Chiefs don't have to necessarily show anything new on tape, to your point, Dusty. Like, the Panthers are the Panthers. They're rebuilding, okay? So
for 5 years, though.
It's a nice way to put it, Nate. I would have said they just suck, but you went the nice route.
I did. I went the nice route. They are on a two-game winning surprise. I mean, I know we make fun of this all the time, Bob, but like, you know, the Panthers are coming off a bye week. They did beat the internet has informed me that they beat the New York Giants in Germany.
That's right.
You think I'm watching a snap of that thing?
No.
I'm not crunching through the film on this one.
Neither are the Giants, because they still think Daniel Jones, the players, is a good quarterback. So clearly they didn't watch the film of that one either.
I'm not going to grind the tape on this.
Oh, God, no. If you did, I'd call security or something and have you, you know, like, wake up. What are you doing, man? You're Schefter-ing this thing. No need for that, Nate. None. Why is the sack number down, though, this year? Like, what do you attribute it to?
I attribute it to injuries. To Mike Dana, he's been dealing with the pec, the calf, the wrist. Obviously Charles Domenech was in the mix because, you know, he's coming off an ACL injury. George Karloftis still plays just about every snap possible, but I think sometimes he gets a little the thing about the fourth and two run by Josh Allen is like, man, that is so out of character in terms of like rush lane integrity from George Karloftis. Like, I was just stunned that I'm like, you're going for a sack when you should be trying to contain a guy because you're only protecting 2 yards. It's not like it's on 30. It's not fourth and 10, man. Like, he just, he just tried to use a speed rush, and I just thought that, man, that's not the right time, and that seems so uncharacteristic of what Karlaftis is on a down-to-down basis. It doesn't help, too, that, like, Chris Jones has been this close, right? I mean, he absolutely destroyed the New Orleans Saints offensive line, but for whatever reason, he just couldn't get the sack. Same with last week, where there's two times in the first half, you could tell Josh Allen is, like, screaming inside. He's like, oh, my Lord, like, where did he come from? But because there's no one else generating pressure, it's not like Chris led you know, right into the lap of, you know, Mike Dana or Joshua Uche. They need to play Uche more. Like, you got to see what you traded for. It's been almost a month now. Like, he clearly knows the plays. Like, just cut him loose. So there's a number of factors. I just think teams are getting smart now about getting the ball out of their hands. And because you don't have someone like Legarius Sneed with Trent McDuffie, all of a sudden those easy throws are just more available now. Like, I think the Bills really looked at Nazi Johnson and said, wow, he's on the field every play. Great. I can just throw the ball. No matter if it's a blitz, no matter if it's, you know, deep zone coverage, no matter if Chris Jones is in my lap, I can just always check it down to his side of the field and hope that he or Tre'Mari Conner miss a tackle. And guess what? That was the largest completion from Josh Allen in the second half, was a 22-yard pass where he literally checked the ball down to Khalil Shakir, and Khalil makes both Tre'Mari Conner and Nazi Johnson miss for, you know, 25 yards after the catch when he caught the ball behind the line of scrimmage. So how can I get pressure on the quarterback consistently when the quarterback can just dump the ball off and know that he's going to get positive yards, because that player is not Legarius Sneed, and that player is not Trent McDuffie. So it's a combination of things the way that they always are, but somebody's got to get consistent pressure alongside Chris Jones, because it's easy to escape one guy. It's a lot more difficult to escape a pocket when there's two or three guys collapsing on you.
That beautiful sound and that lovely laugh is Nate Taylor, The Athletic. Nate, what do you got coming up this week on your website, The Athletic?
Yeah, well, I will be writing today about the pass rush, so hopefully I can find some answers. I've looked at some of the advanced statistics. They're bad, real bad, like real bad, like holy smokes, like real bad. And then everything else, you know, we'll just see how soon can I get home from Charlotte. Like, thank God this is a noon 1 o'clock game. And, you know, I might be asking Delta to hey, hope that's like just a little longer so I can get home sooner.
No doubt about it, Nate. Uh-huh. Well, enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll talk to you next Thursday.
All right, fellas. Thank you so much.
No doubt about it. Nate Taylor there, presented by Mark Ferguson. We all make mistakes. Let Mark and his legal team make the best of them. 816-221-1750. Coming on the other side, a question that started in the text thread that led to other questions of, is this wrong or is this right? 913-586-7965. You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
Fesco and Dusty.
I can feel it all the way down in my plums.
On Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
Back here on 96.5 The Fan, Fesco and Dusty and Mac with you for another hour and 12 minutes. And then here in about 30 minutes, we'll be joined by Alex Gold because there is a Thursday night football game tonight. 20-mile-an-hour winds.
Going to be a good one.
Blowing lake snow in Cleveland. Battle of two AFC North teams. I understand it's Pittsburgh versus Cleveland. You think, come on, Dusty, how does this game get entertaining? Well, you make bets and you enjoy AFC North battles.
And snow.
And it's Thursday night. What else are you going to do? Start watching Christmas movies?
You could do that.
Absolutely could do that.
Or apparently you can watch a show and listen to your AirPods at the same time while you're somebody else watches the show.
So I want to ask couples this question, right?
So I'm out.
Okay. see you later, Dusty. Take care, Dusty. That's
this guy hates Christmas and hates relationships.
Yeah, if you'd like to date Dusty, 913-586-7965. No, so I want to ask the text line this because I've noticed, not of late, but like it just all of a sudden, like we'll sit down on the couch and watch something, whether it's a game or whatever, and I'll have the TV on, and then I'll look over at Jen, and she's got her earbuds in, and she's watching some crap on her phone that, oh, you got to see episode 3, season 2 of whatever the hell she's watching.
Housewives in Atlanta.
Now, I will say this. I am a horrible, horrible show watcher. Terrible show watcher. Like, I'll start something, and I'll get halfway through, and it has, like, a break, and then I never go back. Like, Cobra Kai, I've seen the first 2 seasons. I haven't gone back because there was, you know, whatever it is, right? And so I get it. She's trying to watch stuff because I necessarily don't. But do many people in couples and relationships, like, sit there together on the couch and watch separate things?
I don't know.
I think it's, I think so. Dusty's like, I have no clue, man. I think so. I think Hannah and I definitely do that.
You do that?
Well, yeah, because it's like a way, it's like.
What about your mom's friend?
It's like a way for us to still like be together in the same room, but like doing our own thing. Because you come home from day work, I'm sure you're the same. You want your like little me time, you know, whether it's you watching whatever you want to watch, taking a breath, but you also like want to have that moment with your partner, whatever it is. So usually watch a show and then I'm like, all right, babe, I'm going to play my game. I'm going to watch the game and then she'll get on and watch Real Housewives
and do her own thing. But I just like, she's constantly doing this and I didn't know if they're like, do I have an odor or something? Like,
have you like you guys are watching something together and then she bails on you?
No. A lot of times it just starts separate, you know, like or sometimes she'll go upstairs and I'll stay downstairs or we'll be in separate rooms watching different things. Like, is that more of a thing now than it ever used to be because of, you know, with Netlu and Hooflix and all this kind of stuff that we're, you know, watching these days and all these streaming services? Does, because there's a lot of crap she watches. I'll be honest, there's a lot of junk that she's watched. I have no interest in watching.
Tell me about
it. There's a lot of stuff my attention span doesn't work and whatever the case may be. So I just don't know if that's more common or if that's just us being like, yeah, you do your thing, I'll do my thing, and you know, we'll see you later.
My only question is, how many TVs do you have in your house?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Ow.
You have 9 TVs in
and she watches on her phone.
And she, I was going to say, she's got her phone out.
Now, how many do I constantly use all the time? Maybe 2. You know, we got the ones outside, but I'm not 2. Sitting out there. Got one in like the main area, got 2 in the basement, and the kids each have 1, and we have 1 in our bedroom. So,
wow. So I feel like I would just go to a different room and watch TV.
But she watches on her phone.
I don't know. Someone from the 816 says, I think it's more common than you think. My wife and I don't. However, I'm also not a great show watcher, but we don't watch the Chiefs together because of my superstitions.
Yeah, we have a little bit of that too. Sometimes she'll go to a different room and watch the Chiefs if not working, you know, the right way or whatever it is and whatnot. And quite honestly, there are times where I don't want to watch the Chiefs with her. Like, she's losing her mind over stuff. It's the first play of the game. It's a -1. So what? You know, like stuff like that. Like,
I once dated a girl who loved Impractical Jokers, and I hated it. And I would just go to sleep.
You would?
Oh, yeah.
You don't like it?
No.
I think it's great.
I think it's funny.
I think it's very funny.
Yeah.
Let's put a balloon on the back of their belt strap and make sure they don't notice it.
Did you like Tom Green back in the day?
Yes.
Yes, where he interviewed people. My favorite one was he had the microphone with poop on it and would go around and interview people.
He also he painted his parents' house plaid.
Yeah. Yes.
He made chest hair sandwiches and asked if people wanted to take a bite.
He's coming back from what I understand. They said he's making a comeback, but
let you Google search why Tom Green went irrelevant. It's quite drastic.
Yikes.
I don't even know.
I'll tell you in the break.
All right, yeah, please do. But so I just wondered, like, is that commonplace with people?
Sounds like it from the text line.
Good. Okay. All right.
Somebody also said, my wife got into fantasy football this year. She loves watching football now with me. I was like, that's the power of fantasy football,
man. It is, yeah.
Like, it can do that to you.
All right.
My biggest question I had when we had this conversation was, I saw a tweet from Quick Trip, and it said, watching you pull back the drink from the fountain to take a big swig and then to fill it back up and then go pay for it. I thought that was the pro move.
That is the absolute pro move.
Like, when you're pining for that chug at the QT, you put it under the thing. It's like, my back of the day was just the yellow Gatorade with crushed ice. I would take a huge slug off that, refill it, then go pay for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess Quick Trip's like, we just act like we don't see that. And I'm like, doesn't everybody do this?
Yeah.
Like, am I in the wrong for that?
I was more surprised that people aren't doing this.
I saw a guy go in there the other day just to use their microwave and leave.
With his own food, Tupperware. That's awesome. I love that.
On the phone with like the old Bluetooth in the ear.
Juice. Hell yeah.
Dude, he walked in, Tupperware, nuked it, walked out. I was like, respect, dude.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Now, last week when I was struggling with my voice, I went to Quick Trip to look for lemon, right? Yeah. I figured, where else are you going to go, right?
Not there.
They actually have those little lemon packets, and the guy's like, just take a couple. I'm like, cool, that's man. Nice. Thanks, yeah. You know.
Yeah, when I would do your guys' show, like whenever like your guys' producer was out and I'd fill in, I'd go to Quick Trip, I'd be the only one there. Amazingly, now that I do this show, everybody's a Quick Trip.
Every day, this town gets earlier and earlier, Dusty. It's crazy.
I would go in there.
Weird.
And I would get a coffee, and there'd be this little lady at the Lee Summit Quick Trip right on 350 and 3rd Street. Just the coffee? Just the coffee. Have a good morning.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what? That's really nice of you.
There was a guy at the Casey's down at Metcalf that used to do that with me, too. I'd bring my own cup, you know, and fill it up. Yeah, don't worry about it. He doesn't work there anymore.
Heads up.
I think he was also sleeping in the freezer one time I went in there.
What?
Interesting.
Yeah.
I guess I do like sleeping cold.
Yeah, somebody on the text line, I always bring my lunch to work and go to Quick Trip to heat it up.
Wow.
And I'll even use some of their condiments and then leave.
You don't feel guilty about that? See, I would, that to me is like, it's not stealing, but I would feel like it wasn't. I would buy something that I didn't need so I wouldn't appear to be that guy.
Yeah. I just never knew that. Like, I understand that there's microwaves there for a reason. I just never knew that you could just pop into Quick Trip. Like, somebody says everyone that works normal jobs goes to Quick Trip to warm up their lunch. I thought if you had a job, maybe they had a microwave at the job.
At the job. We have two here.
I wouldn't use
them. The kids have them at school because, you know, Delaney will bring some stuff to school. And, like, I'm like, are you going to heat that? Like, eat that cold? She goes, we got microwaves. I stick it in the microwave. Like,
oh. I haven't had a microwave in 8 years.
Oh, I need new carpet.
Oh, that's not fair.
I think about you a lot now when I'm heating up my food, because yesterday I heated up some leftover asparagus and some beans that I made, right?
In a skillet?
No, I put it in the microwave because I was a little bit of a time crunch, but I was wondering, would you have done it in a skillet?
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you don't care if your food touches?
No, not really.
Okay, so because some people do, because the skillet wouldn't work if you're a food toucher person.
It's all going in one hole and out the other.
I agree.
That's funny you said that, Bob. I also think about Dusty when I'm microwaving my food. Now I really do. I'm like, damn, Dusty doesn't do this.
Yeah. And I've tried. I've, honest to God, have tried as much as possible.
And you've also texted me and be like, you're right, this food does taste better.
It does. Of course it does. Everything in the microwave kills your food. But I have tried as much as possible now not to use the microwave because of you.
I try to be influential. Maybe I'll start a TikTok. That's not happening. No. That's definitely not happening.
Please.
Coming up next, Bob's going to tell you about the
wonderful people. You know, if you did on how to reheat things other than the microwave, it would be a huge hit on TikTok.
Yeah, it could be.
No, you'd blow up.
Yeah.
But my food wouldn't.
Hey.
Coming up, Bob's going to tell you about the wonderful people at Smokehouse. And then we talk about this Thursday night football game that's got me champing at the bit for this action tonight. You're listening to 96.5 The Fan. You're home for Kansas City Sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty.
What the hell's wrong with your station?
On Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.